Today is Wednesday, August 11th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Junior Dorfo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, Taliban takes another Afghan provincial capital.
The Taliban took control of another city in northern Afghanistan on Wednesday, taking the number of provincial capitals to fall to 8 in just 6 days.
Plus, UN warns of war crimes in Afghanistan.
The United Nations has warned that reports of violation and civilian casualties in Afghanistan by Taliban fighters may amount to war crimes.
Also, Mozambique and Rwandan forces recapture strategic port city. Our top story today is in Afghanistan. Taliban fighters took control of another city in northern Afghanistan on Wednesday, and officials said the 8th provincial capital to fall to the insurgents in 6 days. Libby Hogan of Reuters reports.
The Taliban took control of another city in northern Afghanistan on Wednesday, taking the number of provincial capitals to fall to 8 in just 6 days. It comes a day after the UN warned that reports of violations and civilian casualties could amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. Afghan fighters seized Faizabad, the capital of the northeastern province Badakhshan. That far northeastern province borders Tajikistan, Pakistan, and China. Soldiers from Tajikistan were joined by forces from Russia and Uzbekistan to conduct military drills on Tuesday, just 12 miles from the Afghan border. Tajikistan's Minister of Defense, Shirali Mizo, lamented the deteriorating situation along the border.
The withdrawal of troops from Afghanistan has led to an increase in the destructive activities of the terrorist groups. In such conditions, we must prevent them from spreading to our countries, minimize their impact on the security situation in the Central Asian region.
As US-led forces complete their withdrawal and Taliban forces close in on the biggest city in the north, Mazar-e-Sharif, the militants aim to defeat President Ashraf Ghani's US-backed government and reimpose strict Islamic law. The speed of their advance has shocked the government and its allies. Taliban forces now control 65% of Afghanistan and have taken or threatened to take 11 provincial capitals. Government officials have appealed for pressure on Pakistan to stop Taliban reinforcements and supplies flowing over the border. Pakistan denies backing the Taliban. US President Joe Biden urged Afghan leaders to fight for their homeland, saying on Tuesday he did not regret his decision to withdraw. He noted that the US has spent more than $1 trillion over 20 years and lost thousands of troops.
That's Libby Hogan of Reuters. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani landed in Mazar al-Sharif on Wednesday to rally the northern city's defenders as Taliban forces consolidated control of Faizabad, capital of northeastern province of Badakhshan. Jawad Mujadidi, a provincial council member from Badakhshan, said the Taliban laid siege on Faizabad before launching an offensive on Tuesday. The north was for years Afghanistan's most peaceful region, with only minimal Taliban presence. The Taliban are battling to defeat the US-backed government and reimpose strict Islamic law. Taliban forces now control 65% of Afghanistan, having taken or threatened to take 11 provincial capitals and seek to deprive Kabul of its traditional support from national forces in the north, a senior European Union official said on Tuesday. US President Joe Biden urged Afghan leaders to fight for their homeland, saying on Tuesday he did not regret his decision to withdraw, noting that the U.S. had spent more than $1 trillion over 20 years and lost thousands of troops. He added that the U.S. was providing significant air support, food, equipment, and salaries to Afghan forces. As Taliban fighters tighten their grip on captured territory, the U.N. fear war crimes may have been committed. Louisa Nax of Reuters has more.
The United Nations has warned that reports of violation and civilian casualties in Afghanistan by Taliban fighters may amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity. The stark warning comes as the Taliban tighten their grip on captured territory in the country, now controlling 65% of it, a European Union official said on Tuesday. President Ashraf Ghani has called on regional strongmen to support his government, following a stunning string of Taliban gains after US-led foreign forces pulled out. UN Human Rights Office spokeswoman Ravina Shamdasani warned of the worsening situation.
Civilian casualties are continuing to mount, and reports of violations that may amount to war crimes and crimes against humanity continue to emerge. We all know that urban warfare results in scores of civilians being killed. We have seen it before, too many times. In Afghanistan, since the 9th of July, in four cities alone, and these are Lashkargah, Kandahar, Herat, and Kunduz, at least 183 civilians have been killed, and 1,181 have been injured, including children.
Taliban and government officials have confirmed that the Islamist group has overrun six provincial capitals in recent days. The European Union officials said on Tuesday about 400,000 Afghans have been internally displaced in recent months, and there has been an increase in numbers attempting to flee. Shamdasani said those who remain are terrified.
The people of Afghanistan are speaking of their deep fears of a return to the worst of the human rights violations of the past. Women, minorities, human rights defenders, journalists, as well as others who are particularly vulnerable, need particular protection. There are very real risks of renewed atrocities against ethnic and religious minorities.
The United States will complete the withdrawal of its forces at the end of this month, under a deal agreed with the Taliban. In return, the Taliban has promised not to attack foreign forces as they withdraw, but has not agreed a ceasefire with government forces.
That's Louisa Nax of Reuters. A spokesman for the Taliban's political office told Al Jazeera TV on Tuesday that the group is committed to negotiations in Doha and does not want talks to collapse. A member of the Afghan government delegation in Doha negotiation also spoke to the Qatar-based channel, saying the government demands a mediator in the negotiations to, quote, determine the seriousness of the parties, unquote. The Taliban spokesman said that, quote, it was the government that rejected the principle of a mediator, not the Taliban, according to Al Jazeera. State Department spokesman Ned Price says the United States is evaluating the security around its embassy in Kabul daily. He was responding to a question Tuesday about a potential further drawdown from the mission as the Taliban takes more territory in Afghanistan.
Certainly the levels of violence do not appear consistent with what the Taliban pledged in that agreement. We do want to minimize the number of employees in Afghanistan whose functions can be performed elsewhere. Obviously, it is a challenging security environment. Were we confident, were we comfortable having a larger staffing presence there, we would. But we are evaluating the threat environment on a daily basis. The embassy is in regular contact with Washington, with the most senior people in this building, who in turn are a regular contact with our colleagues at the NSC and the White House on this dynamic. But for right now, we have been able to continue those core activities that are important for us to conduct on the ground. So far, as of today, six flights have landed in the United States. We have relocated almost 1,000 special immigrants and their family members as of August 10th. That number is in fact 995. So when we say almost, we mean almost. We are, of course, unable to preview upcoming flight schedules, but we expect to surpass that 1,000 number very shortly. To date, approximately 60% of the Afghan special immigrants who arrived at Fort Lee have departed Fort Lee to begin their new lives in the United States with assistance from the U.S. Refugee Admissions Program.
That's State Department spokesman Ned Price. Mozambican and Rwandan security forces have recaptured the port city of Mocimbo da Praia, an insurgent stronghold, the two countries said, adding to a growing list of retaking towns and villages. Soraya Ali of Reuters reports.
Security forces from Mozambique and Rwanda said they had recaptured the port town of Mocimboa de Praia from Islamic insurgents on Sunday. The town is in Mozambique's northernmost province of Cabo Delgado, where forces have been battling insurgents linked to Islamic State since 2017. The region is home to gas developments worth some $60 billion. But the unrest escalated there last year when insurgents seized entire towns, including the strategically important Mocimboa de Praia. The town is 37 miles south of the gas projects. It had previously been used as the main airport for international workers flying into the gas developments, and its port is used for cargo deliveries. Last month, Rwanda deployed 1,000 troops to fight alongside Mozambique and its allies. A Rwandan Defense Force spokesman told Reuters the insurgents, who fled to nearby forests, were greatly weakened by losing Musembura Depraya. They had held it for nearly a year, and it was a stronghold for their supplies. He said there had been heavy fighting. Almost 800,000 people have been displaced in Cabo Delgado, and the fighting has brought a $20 billion natural gas project to a halt.
That's Soria Ali of Reuters. This is the Voice of America. The leader of an armed group that the Ethiopian government has designated a terrorist organization says his group has struck a military alliance with the Tigray forces, who are now pressing towards the capital. Kumsa Dereba, the leader of the Oromo Liberation Army, spoke in an exclusive interview with the Associated Press. The conflict that erupted in the Tigray region last year is spreading into other parts of Africa's second most populous country. Kumsa Dereba says the, quote, "only solution now is overthrowing this government militarily," unquote. Five people have jumped from an apartment building in Yangon, Myanmar's largest city, to escape a raid by government security forces, and at least two people have died. Police officers said in a radio conversation during the raid that five people, four men and a woman, jumped before they could be apprehended. They said three died and two others had life-threatening injuries. But the government said later the incident involved eight people. It said two died, three were hospitalized, and three others were arrested.
This is Science in a Minute.
Australian scientists have analyzed the fossilized jaw of what they refer to as a fearsome flying dragon. Tim Richards and his team of researchers from the University of Queensland found that the jaw belongs to a new species of the flying pterosaur. The beast named Tabung Ngaga Shawi, which means spear in mouth from the language of the extinct Wanamara Nation who lived near where the fossil was found, and the last name of the man who uncovered the remains in 2011, Len Shaw. Richards describes the animal as having a meter-long skull, a spear-like mouth with 40 teeth, and a wingspan that spread to around 7 meters. The flying dragon is said to have fed on fish that once lived in the large and now extinct Aramanga Inland Sea in Queensland's outback region. The researchers' findings have been published in the Journal of Vertebrate Paleontology. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. UN Special Envoy on Myanmar said on Tuesday the country's military leaders appears determined to solidify his grip on power following a February coup, and ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi's political party could soon be disbanded. Christian Schreiner Bergener cited military ruler Ming Aung Hlaing's announcement this month that he was now prime minister in the newly formed caretaker government, and also a formal annulment of the results of last November's election, which Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy won.
"The situation in Myanmar is still worrisome and keeps me very busy. In my view, the commander-in-chief appears determined to solidify his grip on power with the latest caretaker government announcement, also with the formal annulment of the election result from last year, and with the declaration of the commander-in-chief to be the prime minister of the country. And I fear that we will soon hear also that the NLD party could be disbanded. This is an attempt to promote legitimacy against lack of international action taken. And I have to make clear that the UN does not recognize government, so it's up to the member states. And as long as member states do not make any decision, the permanent representative, Ambassador Joe Motun, is the legitimate representative of Myanmar in New York. And Aung San Suu Kyi and President Win Myint are the leaders, as mentioned also in the presidential statement of the Security Council of the 4th February this year. The situation is very difficult for the people. It's a difficult environment to live now in Myanmar. There is no freedom of speech, and I have still grave concerns about attacks against free press. And I urge always in my discussions also with the army to release political prisoners, including many media workers.
That's UN Special Envoy on Myanmar, Shrena Bugina. Massive forest fires have gripped Greece for more than a week. The government has come under fierce criticism for failing to heed warnings of wildfires amid a protracted heat wave affecting not just Greece, but the Balkans and southern Europe. Anthi Karasava reports from Athens.
Some of the nearly 600 wildfires that have sparked across Greece have been brought under control, but fresh ones flared on the island of Evia and in the Peloponnese, adding to the 62 evacuation orders authorities issued over the past week across the country. Several mayors criticized a lack of aerial support in fighting the fires, despite the government's assurances earlier this year that it had set aside ample resources. But even before the fires began, environmental experts had warned of the pending danger. Those experts, including Kostas Sinolakis, a professor of natural hazards management, say the government in Athens has yet to grasp the extent of the threat of climate change.
I think politicians are simply not prepared for the scale of devastation. Politicians need to start understanding that if we don't act, this is the new normal, and perhaps it's already too late.
The warning follows Monday's nationally televised address by Prime Minister Kyriakos Mitsotakis.
Έγιναν 62 οργανωμένες απομακρύνσεις κατοίκων. Η έκταση της καταστροφής...
Mitsotakis pledged more than $500 million to fund rebuilding, reforesting and compensation, and said special inquiries would be set up to determine what went wrong and who should be held accountable. Greece is not alone. It is suffering under the worst heat wave since 1987. The heat and drought, both linked to climate change, are fueling fires across Europe, from Turkey and Italy to Russia's Siberia. Greece has struggled to contain the hundreds of wildfires that have turned pristine pine forests into ash and forced about 60,000 people to flee. The government has said its main priority has been to save and protect lives. More than 49,000 hectares have burnt on Evia alone, according to the European Union data. Hundreds of firefighters, among them soldiers, mountain rangers, and volunteers from across Greece, Europe, and the US, are fighting the blazes and watching for flare-ups. At least three people have been arrested on suspicion of arson, but no charges yet have been filed. Anthi Karasava for VOA News, Athens.
A South African court on Tuesday again postponed a long-delayed corruption trial against jailed former President Jacob Zuma to September 9th, following his hospitalization last week of an undisclosed medical condition. Soraya Ali of Reuters reports.
A South African court again postponed the corruption trial against jailed former President Jacob Zuma on Tuesday following his hospitalization last week. The long-delayed trial has now been moved to September 9th. Zuma was expected to appear in court in a $2 billion arms deal corruption case that led to his sacking as South Africa's deputy president in 2005. He denies all charges. He was jailed last month on a separate contempt of court matter that led to a wave of looting and unrest in the country. He was moved to a hospital on Friday for medical observation, though prison officials did not provide details of his condition. A high court judge granted the postponement, but ordered Zuma's team to produce a medical report by August 20th. Wim Trengov, who is representing the National Prosecuting Authority, said they had been left completely in the dark about Zuma's condition. 79-year-old Zuma asked the Constitutional Court to annul his jail sentence last month, partly on the grounds that he was suffering from an unspecified medical condition. The judge ordered the state to appoint a medical doctor of its choice to assess whether Zuma was fit to stand trial and give evidence.
That's Soria Ali of Reuters. Iraqi refugees at the Al-Hol camp in northeast Syria are voicing concern about growing violence inside the camp following the weekend slaying of yet another Iraqi by suspected Islamic State militants. The camp hosts tens of thousands of people, including families of Islamic State foreign fighters. VOA's Zana Omar has filed this report, narrated by Siwan Kajo.
The security situation at the Al-Hol camp in northeast Syria is deteriorating once again. Tens of thousands of displaced Iraqi and Syrian refugees live there, along with thousands of families of Islamic State foreign fighters. Over the weekend, an Iraqi refugee was killed and three others were seriously wounded in an attack by a suspected Islamic State cell. The attack brings the number of those killed inside the camp since mid-April to 25. The recent rise in violence worries many Iraqi refugees at Al-Hol.
Our situation is getting worse because of these assassinations. Honestly, if we went back to Iraq and stayed at another refugee camp, it would be better than this place.
There are about 30,000 Iraqi refugees living in Al-Hol, according to the camp's Kurdish-led authorities. In March, the US-backed Syrian Democratic Forces launched a major security operation to curb attacks by Islamic State cells inside the camp. More than 125 suspected IS operatives were arrested in the campaign. But camp residents say there has been an uptick in violence in recent weeks.
Killing has become a daily occurrence here. Almost every day, they kill one or two people at the camp.
Camp officials say the attackers mostly use knives and weapons with silencers when targeting their victims. Most of the attacks have taken place at night when the presence of security forces is low.
We can't wait for the night to be over because at night you never know who can enter your tent.
An official at Al-Hol camp told VOA at least 93 families, a total of 380 people, have been repatriated from Al-Hol camp since May. There are more than 62,000 people living at Al-Hol, including about 40,000 children, according to the latest UN and US estimates. For Zana Omar in Al-Hol, Syria, this is Sirwan Kejo, VOA News.
US government in a London court has appealed against a ruling by a British judge that WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange should not be extradited. Washington has sought the extradition of Assange over his role in one of the biggest ever leaks of classified information, accusing him of putting lives in danger by releasing vast troves of confidential U.S. military records and diplomatic cables. He has now spent 9 years in jail or self-incarceration in Britain, and both Assange's fiancée, Stella Morris, and the British judge overseeing the extradition requests have warned he may not survive a process to send him across the Atlantic. U.S. prosecutors and Western security officials regard Assange as a reckless enemy of the state whose actions threatened the lives of agents named in the leaked materials. Supporters see him as an anti-establishment hero who exposed U.S. wrongdoings in Afghanistan and Iraq and says his prosecution is a politically motivated assault on journalism that gives you a free pass to oppressive regimes around the world. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mahwil Yabaro, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofor in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a good evening.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's newsmaker interview program. Join us each Saturday and Sunday when we talk with authors, analysts, and policymakers who provide fresh insight on topics ranging from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. You can listen to Press Conference USA on the radio or online at voanews.com/PCUSA. While you're visiting our website, be sure to subscribe to our podcast. We'd also love to hear from you. Just send an email to pcusa@voanews.com or connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA or on Twitter at CarolCastielVOA. That's Press Conference USA every Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international...